Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. Apologies to all of those who are listening a little bit, who are listening live. We started a little bit late today because of a scheduling conflict, but we are now all here to give you the news, analysis, opinion, and one-liners that you so demand. I'm, of course, your host, Nicholas Larimer, and today I'm joined by Sara Gan. Sara, how are you doing?
Cold. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. It's one of those days. Clear skies and cold air. Awesome. And, of course, we also have – sorry, go ahead, sorry.
No. That was it. I cannot say anymore.
And, of course, we also are joined by Mr. Becky Matlobo. Becky, how are you doing?
Thank you, Nick. And good afternoon, everyone. Just to let everyone know that it's not Nick's fault that we're late. It's actually my fault. So don't butcher him, butcher me. But it's good to be here.
You're too kind, Becky. But anyway, let's get started on the news. And the first one today is that we had a very interesting set of by-elections around the country. So on the show, we've been following by-elections across the country pretty closely. And the overall trend is that outside of Mpumalanga and Limpopo, the ANC is in very big trouble. So I think there were 5 by-elections yesterday, one in the West Rand, one in Soweto, one in Northern Cape, one in Mpumalanga, one in KZN, and yeah, I think that was all of them. But anyway, the important ones are the one in the West Rand, where Ward 29 in Rand West City was won by the EFF. They, I think, jumped about 20% in that by-election from what they got in the 2021 result, and the ANC lost the ward to them. But also good news for the DA in Kariesburg in the Northern Cape. Small town that DA managed to jump from 13% of the votes in 2021 to 42% of the votes, winning the ward off of the ANC. They seem to have collected support from the KCM, who are a local party, but also from some other parties. I think the Freedom Front Plus, for example, didn't stand there. And so all of that support came to the DA, which then managed to win the area for the first time since that ward has been in its current boundaries, which I'm sure they're very happy about. But even more concerning for the ANC is its heartland, Soweto. In many ways, it has long been the sort of bedrock of ANC support, particularly in Johannesburg, and it looks like it's eroding. There was a ward in there was an election in Ward 53, Lerofeng, I think it's the area, in Soweto yesterday, and the ANC support went from sort of 50s down by like 20 points to almost lose the ward to the EFF. It was a very split election. I think the DA didn't do too well there. They got about 4% of the vote, which is up slightly, but negligibly. The Action SA did pretty well. They went up from somewhere around 17% to about 22%. The EFF went up by 8%, and there was an independent who went up by 19% there, taking from the ANC. So the ANC held that ward, but very, very close. And that's a terrible sign for them. If that pattern is replicated across the rest of the country in 2024, across the rest of South Africa's townships, the ANC might very well be very distant from national government come the next election. So very exciting stuff. There was also the KZN by-election. The IFP almost took a ward from the ANC. They won it, I think, by 30 votes. It was 32% to the ANC's 33%. So a very, very narrow election. It looks like, once again, you know, by-elections are not always completely indicative of what the final result is. In most of these elections, except the Kariesburg one, the turnout was extremely low. In the Kariesburg one, 72% of the voters turned out in that ward that the DA won. But it looks like the ANC is heading for some big trouble unless they can turn things around. And I think we've seen enough of these by-elections now to show that, in fact, this is not just an isolated event. The one exception to this whole thing was the by-election in Mpumalanga, where it's on the sort of border between Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and Gauteng, and there the ANC dropped by about 2%. So, you know, pretty negligible stuff. Becky, let me start with you. What do you make of this? You've, I'm sure, heard of some polling and stuff. Am I right to say that this is a trend and not just isolated incidents?
Yeah, Nick, the simple case is that people are fed up of the ANC, particularly on the local areas that they stay in. I've also seen this myself anecdotally in the area that I stay in, which is has had quite a high ANC support, dramatically declined in the local government elections from 72% in the previous election to now just 52% given the 2021 election. So you're seeing this a decline in ANC voter support in these districts. And also, what's also interesting is that it's really just simple issues, Nick, that are not being solved, such as that of potholes in front of your house, crime levels, police not being able to respond on time, service delivery, water outages once a week, load reductions 5 hours once a week. These are the issues that these residents face on a daily basis, primarily also in Soweto, for example, as well as in other areas in Ekurhuleni. So you see that due to those factors, voters are fed up. They are fed up of the ANC. They're now voting for independent candidates, or they're voting for other opposition parties, be it that of the DA, be it that of now, if you look at the 2021 elections, Action SA, as well as in some areas being that of the EFF. In fact, what we see here is that from last year's local government elections until now, looking at all the by-elections that have taken place, the ANC has lost about 6 by-elections. They have held the most at 14, but by far they have lost the most by-election, which is really reflective of what we see in the data, Nick, is that we're seeing ANC support wane because they're not delivering on the simple stuff such as service delivery, not delivering on the simple stuff such as the protection of people and citizens in these areas, as well as that of just simply having lights on the street at night so that women and kids are not robbed. These are simple issues that they're simply not solving, and that has resulted in their support to continue to decline.
So, Sarah, what's really interesting to me about a lot of this is if you look at a, like, really minute level, you see that the electorate, which for a very long time has been pretty solid, little shifts here and there, seems to be coming a lot more fluid. And we're seeing now these big swings. If you looked at the individual voting districts in that Soweto by-election, it was very strange because normally what one voting district votes, all the others are going to be pretty close in terms of how they vote as well. But here, there was one that was won by the independent. That's presumably the voting district where he lives. I think Action SA almost won one. The ANC won one. The EFF won one. It was, it's like all the voters are suddenly looking around. Right, exactly. And they're all having a look. I don't know. Do you get the sense that maybe everything is up for grabs? Of these by-elections, it's been difficult to see who's winning.
I mean, I think you made the important point at the beginning that you can't always rely on extrapolating from local government to national government elections. There's always a difference. But as you said, there's certainly been that trend where you've seen the ANC get the shock in 2016 on the, on the local elections. And every by-election that's happened since, I don't remember all the figures, but you haven't seen the ANC sort of picking up in areas. It's either stayed the same or it's dropped. And in some places it's dropped quite dramatically. And as you say, the spread, because you're dealing with the emotional, force of the local issues that Becky was talking about, I suspect it's a combination of the promises or the personalities of the people standing in those different areas for the different parties that may attract people. And that's why you've got a range. It's EFF here, it's ASA here, it's an independent there, etc. I think though that the combination of sort of broad scale countrywide deprivation and local deprivation, everything's coming on top of each other. So it's not just what's happening at somebody's backyard, but it's what's happening in big backyard is replicated to happening at a national level. And I think that's what the ANC has to be very, very wary about. I find I'm not a big expert on elections, but I find the DA, the significant win for the DA in the Northern Cape interesting because the Northern Cape is not generally DA friendly. if I can put it that way. It is sparsely populated, and a lot of small, relatively smallish communities. But the fact that it jumped in the one so considerably suggests that people actually are looking around, because the Northern Cape has always been very, very stable. So I just think it's the outcome of, it doesn't matter where you live, some places are slightly better served than others, but people have become distinctly poorer, and the trend has carried on going downwards. And I think, to some extent at least, these elections are significant, and that is not in the ANC's favor.
No, I think that's definitely correct. And I don't know if I did mention it specifically, but the DA jumped from 13% to 42% of the votes which is, you know, a big swing. And what really seems to be happening to me, and this is what threatens the ANC at the national level, is that there's been a sort of a loss in goodwill and credibility and the benefit of the doubt that they've relied on for so long. And there was this, you know, it is a thing that we do see all over the world. Politics changes very slowly, and then all of a sudden there's sort of a break. Mm. It's like a snowball going down a hill, because the more people get turned off by something in politics, you know, they influence their family and their friends.
Yeah. I mean, right. an example of this is what happened after the KZN flooding, right? There was this popular meme that was blowing all over social media of hyenas. That was due to the disaster relief funds that would be allocated towards KZN. And those hyenas were portrayed to be that of ANC council members that are looking at this money for themselves. Mm-hmm. So public opinion on ANC, as well as the sentiment towards the ANC, has been largely negative.
And right. Just perhaps one last observation is that, of course, every year that passes, your ideologically or emotional attachment to the ANC, it's an older generation. That generation's passing, and the younger generation is coming up, not as tied to the issues and not as tied to the emotion, but hugely unemployed.
No, definitely. And so now we're really in a zone where it's kind of anything goes, and it's up to the opposition parties to kind of claim that space. I think it'll be very difficult to change the dynamics of the country in a positive direction if the EFF is the one that fills that space. And it's been a bit of a mixed record in the recent by-elections. They've won, I think, 2 wards of the ANC, which was quite rare for them. But, you know, this is some good progress for them. Action SA has done quite well in some places, but it hasn't managed to quite get that victory breakthrough anywhere yet. The DA has had mixed success, going backwards in some places, but going forwards in others. So I don't think it might be too early to say which block of the opposition is going to kind of maybe take up the slack here. Perhaps there's something that independent vote shows that, you know, new political formations might emerge before the next election. Becky, any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I agree with those sentiments there, Nick. I think what we may see is a new political player. Of actually, in the national elections, this is what has developed the CRA's, as well as the Institute's perspective on the Wild Dogs thesis, that instead of having one political player dominate within the upcoming elections, it'll be a coalition of parties, largely due to the likelihood of defeating the ANC as a coalition rather than just one party. I believe that we should closely monitor what's happening in these local districts, in these local areas, just to get a sentiment, even though it's quite very low turnouts and so forth, but just to get a sense of what may occur in the national elections, because I am seeing a rise in independent councils as well as a rise in other opposition parties. The question is how do those parties then work together to therefore defeat the ANC in the 2024 election, and if they have common values as well in the upcoming elections.
So our former CEO, Frans Krenier, wrote an opinion piece recently where he said that if you're looking at for the future of South Africa, you should probably look towards Israel or Germany. I think we're going to be much more on the Israel side there, which is lots of parties that don't really like each other at all, forming coalitions for kind of short-term defeating of political opponents. And the Israeli experience shows that, you know, those are not very stable. What is it? They had to have 4 elections or something in the space.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
but the interesting thing is, if the government doesn't interfere too much in the economy, the country still runs.
Right. So I think this is kind of the bit, in many ways, the sort of upside scenario for South Africa that we may in fact be heading towards, is that we have extremely fractious politics and government that doesn't work particularly well, but at least it takes its sort of boot off of the neck of business and the economy. Anyway, remains to be seen. Let's move on to our next story. And this is sort of related to the last one, in that I suspect that the ANC's only real chance to hold onto national power in 2024 is if people continue to believe in Cyril Ramaphosa, who I believe polls still show is by far the most popular politician in South Africa. Ramaphosa is I think at least probably by some estimates twice as popular as the ANC itself. But who knows how long that's going to last. So former correctional services national commissioner and former state security agency director general Arthur Frazier last night put out a strange statement on social media, which immediately got pushed into the headlines. According to Arthur Frazier, he has laid criminal charges against Cyril Ramaphosa for, I believe, allegedly covering up the theft of $4 million from his farm in Limpopo. Frazier alleged that he had provided police with evidence showing Ramaphosa concealed the crime from them and that the suspects had been kidnapped and interrogated. The details of the charges and the supporting evidence, including photographs, bank accounts, video footage, and names, are contained in my statement filed with the Rosebank police station. So I was just thinking about this, you know, Ramaphosa, Arthur Frazier was long associated with the anti-Ramaphosa sort of Zuma camp. Ramaphosa comes in, he appoints Arthur Frazier as National Commissioner of Department of Correctional Services. Arthur Frazier immediately, he helps former President Jacob Zuma get medical parole as his kind of last act as the National Commissioner, and then goes and lays charges against Ramaphosa. I'm really beginning to question the thesis that Ramaphosa is a master strategist, even at internal ANC politics. But Sarah, what do you make of all this? Is there credibility to this? What do you think?
Look, put it this way. Credibility is perhaps a bit of a strong word as when you're dealing with Arthur Frazier. I mean, he has a reputation as one of our viewers says, you know, he should be investigated. He actually has been investigated, and he's been involved in shenanigans relating to Zuma in the Zuma era, and possibly even before, I can't even remember, it goes that far back. And, you know, just as my husband said, no goodness of the first order from way back. So Frazier is quite an operator, and there's a lot to be probably held against him. And also his application to cross-examine witnesses at the Zondo Commission was turned down. So he ends up, after he goes through this state security agency, he ends up going to the prison services. Now, that can't exactly be much of a reward, shall we say, or a promotion. But he served in a very useful purpose, as you say, is literally the day before he retired from the services, or his term came to an end, he motivated and obtained the release of Jacob Zuma from prison on so-called sick leave. So you've got to give the man credit. When he wants to act in one way or another, he does act. But it worries me a little from his point of view, because I think there is so much against him. If you can get the stuff out of the security services, there's a lot against him. But this is really quite a stretch, because, I mean, one wonders whether there isn't a sort of faction of a faction behind him, because, as you say, Cyril is everybody's best hope in the ANC, you know, because he's more loved than the ANC is. And if they can bring him down on something that looks like concealing a crime, or, you know, a bit like corruption, it would serve that purpose. And as audience member says, it does take the heat off him, but he's going about it very publicly. Go on social media. You put something on social media, it's gone around the world 30 times, you know. So I'm not quite sure how this is likely to succeed. I mean, I suppose if you go into something like this with enough bravado and say, oh, Cyril Ramaphosa has concealed a crime, $4 million, you know, you get away with something just by virtue of the art of the performance.
Now, that very much could be the case. I agree with you. Of course, it's difficult to not see this in the context of the upcoming ANC conference in December. Becky, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, exactly. The Nick Cyril, as you rightly stated, is more popular than the party. And according to our polling data, he sits at about 60%. Compare that to ANC's performance of 46%. You can clearly see that the man is popular than his own party. So I would not be surprised that in the coming weeks to see more smearing campaigns against the man. This is not to dismiss whether this is true or not, but I would not be surprised if you start to see politicians or certain whistleblowers start to say that the man is corrupt or start to have other forms of allegation in order to weaken his perception amongst the South African population. And the reason why Cyril has attained such high support among South Africans is because he has positioned himself outside the ANC. He's positioned himself as a person who's trying to help, a person who's business-focused, a person who is a reformer when he's not, and that he wants to implement the changes that would see the person on the street to get that job instead of advertising to get looking for work. So this is how he's popularized himself amongst us. He's not the reformist that he's perceived to be as the media. And I would not be surprised to see furthermore allegations against him. So reading off of this, this is just a way to weaken him as well as trying to get another faction within the ANC to get more support. But at this point, I don't see anyone being successful in that.
Yeah. Sorry, do you have
something? No, I was just going to say, it's such a funny tactic because, I mean, Becky's absolutely right. I mean, Cyril, you know, he's not a reformer. He's a socialist. He was Zuma's right-hand man. So, but his persona conveys something else. And so if you can tarnish him, that's fine on one side, but what happens when the man most favorable to your election prospects has hit the dirt? You know, where do you go next? Because I don't think anyone else is particularly liked one way or another, and certainly not trusted. So it's again art of the performance or performance of the art.
Yeah, I don't think this attack is going to work in particular, because it really kind of plays into this idea that Ramaphosa is being sabotaged by people within his own party. Because I think a lot of supporters of Ramaphosa are going to see these allegations and say, you see, this is a plot by the anti-Cyril faction to take him down, and we need to support him more strongly. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. Anyway, let us now move on to what has undoubtedly, actually, in terms of public interest, probably been the biggest story across the world in the last couple of weeks. Although I don't think we've talked about it on the show, and this is the Johnny Depp Amber Heard defamation trial. And there are some some aspects here that I think that we can comment on. So I'm sure I haven't watched that much of the trial, but I'm sure some of our viewers have. I know a lot of people have been tuning in to kind of watch it almost as a spectator sport. It's been a celebrity personal drama of the first class level. You know, you've got this big famous star and this like beautiful wife of his, who's also, you know, sort of a minor star, battling it out in court, accusing each other of just absolutely horrific things. She accused him, I think, of not only physical abuse but sexual assault, being basically a drug crazed maniac. He accused her of being a sort of psychotic, manipulative, violent abuser. But after a 3-day deliberation, a jury found that Johnny Depp was very much more the aggrieved party here, and that they awarded him, I think it was $10 million in compensation and $5 million in punishment, punitive damages. But they also found that, I think, one of the statements released by Depp's lawyers was defamatory towards Amber Heard, and so awarded her $2 million. Now, these amounts have been reduced a bit, I think, because to comply with Virginia state law where this was all put into place. But it's been quite fascinating. And one of the interesting aspects of this is that the American Civil Liberties Union, so this case centered around a op-ed written by Amber Heard, or at least with Amber Heard's name on it, which implied strongly that Johnny Depp was a domestic abuser, and this was what he was saying was untrue, and he sued her for it. But what's interesting is that the American Civil Liberties Union appears to have written the first draft of that op-ed and possibly have been given a large amount of money by one of Amber Heard's boyfriends at the time, Elon Musk. If he had testified in this trial, by the way, it would have been the biggest thing in the universe. But anyway. Sara, what do you make of this? There's just so many aspects to kind of tackle here, and we don't have a lot of time, but your thoughts.
No, look, I mean, let's talk about performance art. I mean, this was catches attention. Big names, hymns particularly, beautiful people, lots of tears, lots of sumtrana, and all those sorts of things that are just, you know, it's gossip stuff. It's wonderful. I also didn't watch. I watched one 10-minute slot, and I thought, she is really a second-rate actress. You know, she's sitting there in her little suit, and she's crying, she's weeping, she's wailing. I thought, you know, this is ridiculous. But the what was interesting about it, and what I suppose is interesting about his win, and it's not the sort of start of a process, but it's part of the beginning of a process where the whole idea of hashtag me too, hashtag believe the woman is starting to lose currency. And I think that's important in a whole lot of other ways, because what you've had, of course, is the wokeness, the correctness of sort of siding with abused women. And it's a big issue, but at the same time, discarding the fact that you cannot make a court judgment on an issue without evidence. And so there was this, it went with very much the woke idea of you prioritize feelings over fact. And I think that this is, from a serious point of view, this is what this has done. But the speculation on how their careers are going to pan out, whether he's going to do well, whether he's going to not do well, but must go to France or Germany where they accept this sort of stuff, that'll go on for a while. But the thing you've got to admit about sort of the Hollywood set is when they go to court and it gets into the newspaper, as you say, Ukraine disappears, Boris's future disappears, but it's also usually pretty smutty and pretty ugly. And wow, that it was.
Yeah, indeed. A lot of other things to maybe mention here, apart from what Sara has brought up. This is, I think, one of the most high-profile cases of an incident where it seems like the majority of people believe that it was, in fact, a man who was a victim of domestic abuse rather than a woman. Or at least that seems to – Johnny Depp seems to have managed to convince most of the public of that. Becky, what do you make of this?
Yeah, Nick, I think what's important here is that these allegations have huge costs. Right. And I do believe it is justified when allegations are proven to be true that they do carry a significant amount of cost for the party that has enacted those horrendous acts. In this particular regard, those costs has been Johnny Depp's career, which, as Amber Heard's article was published, he was cancelled from movie acting gigs and so forth, like Pirates of the Caribbean, as well as other endorsements and so forth, which are not defending the man at all. He's extremely wealthy, but it's also the wealth that he could have accumulated if this article was not alleged at him.
Apparently his finances actually aren't that good, because not really, because he doesn't have a lot of money, but because he's been spending it like a crazy person. the moment his income dried up from his acting gigs, he got into serious debt.
Yeah, that's absolutely horrible. So you see that those future moving gigs could have assisted in terms of his financial woes. But this is also like, there are many parallels with this, even within South Africa, for example. The highest profile case when rape allegations were alleged at DJ Fresh. Now, for viewers that don't know DJ Fresh, he was a popular DJ at 5FM, as well as Making New Music in the early 2000s in South Africa. In fact, I was a major fan of DJ Fresh when I was a chubby young kid. I used to call myself DJ Fresh because I looked up to the man so much. Now, as soon as those allegations were alleged at him, he was fired from 5FM. He lost all of his endorsements and now is faced with really dwindling income levels and so forth. I'm not sure where that case is in regards to DJ Fizz, as I don't particularly follow such celebrity actions that much. But the point that I want to make here, Nick, is the point that the woke mob does not consider, and that when you start to allege these allegations, you are destroying the lives of people, not only them, but as well as their families. So it should be taken with severe seriousness. And I'm actually glad that Amber, in this particular regard, from the start of the trial going all the way to the end, her support as well as her favorability amongst the people that I saw in regards to watching this case has really waned. They saw her as not being truthful in this regard and instead started to believe Johnny Depp, which I believe will be a good thing for Johnny Depp in terms of PR and in terms of him getting those endorsements that he lost in future.
Can I just say, Becky, that DJ Fresh is still chubby?
So, anyway, an interesting lesson on, and I think once again this proves the value of court proceedings, is that they can be messy and gruesome, but they allow both sides to actually talk about the facts of the matter, and as a result, everyone gets a much better conception of what happened in certain incidents, as opposed to sort of the sort of social media tweet that alleges something and then who knows if it's true or not. Anyway, so this has been quite instructive, I think, in that regard. Anyway, we're out of time for today, so thank you very much for listening. I hope you found this interesting. Please subscribe to the video, like the video, leave us good reviews, all that good stuff, support the Institute of Race Relations, read the Daily Friend, and have, most importantly, a great weekend. Anyway, we'll see you next week on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.